Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best minds in the sport so you can train smarter, stay healthy, and run faster now. And now your host, Tina Muir.
Thank you for joining me today for the latest episode of the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. And I also would like to thank you for your feedback and reviews on iTunes. We are very excited for the future of the podcast and have a lot of great guests lined up. If you have a particular topic or guest you would like us to interview in future podcasts, you can email me at tina@runnersconnect.net. It may not come as a surprise to you, but injury-related topics are usually the most popular articles we have on Runners Connect. No one wants an injury, and it is usually the most frustrating part of being a runner, especially when a lot of non-runners and professionals roll their eyes at us. But wouldn't it be nice to talk to a professional who did not think runners were crazy and could understand both the treatment and the science side of injuries, as well as the drive and passion we have for our sport? Well, that's what you're going to get today from our podcast guest. My guest has his doctorate in physical therapy and specializes in running injuries. All runners need to listen to this podcast, and I'm sure most of you will be nodding your head as we go through this interview. I know I was with a lot of things our guest said. So who is our guest today? Today, we are talking to Jeremy Stoker, who is a physical therapist working at Mountainland Physical Therapy in Kaysville. He has a doctorate from the University of Nebraska. He specializes in treating running injuries. You won't be getting any of the rolling eyes from this physical therapist. He ran his first marathon at age 15, is a certified USATF coach, and is a regular speaker at events. And most recently, he spoke at the American Physical Therapy Association National Conference. So what are we going to cover in today's episode? We're going to look at why 65% of runners and up to 90% of marathon runners will go through some kind of injury each year. How making cross-training a part of your routine can reduce injury risk, maintain fitness during injury, and allow you to return to running faster. And also we will talk about how you can use almost any form of cross-training to get the benefits. We are also going to talk about how new runners can increase their training without becoming injured, and Jeremy's hopes for developing a scale for a safe progression as a runner. Why rotating your shoes can lead to a 39% lower risk of injury, and what you need to look for when selecting your running shoes. The three things to consider if you have pain while running, and how to use those to determine whether to stop running or keep going. In what situations runners need to alter their racing plans or ultimately pull the plug on a race, and why the decisions you make during your return to running post-injury are critical to the rest of your running life, and what you can do to make sure you return to running safely. All right, that's enough from me. I know you're eager to hear, so let's get on with the interview. Meet Jeremy. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Jeremy.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. I'm glad to have this opportunity to chat with people.
We are excited to have you and excited to learn a lot about you. I mean, we've talked about you in the intro, and I guess we can just jump straight on into it. So we hear about all these facts about how there's a high incidence of running injuries, how most runners cannot go a year without some kind of injury. But can you shed some more light on the details about that and why you think it's so high, if it is actually high, or if it's just kind of spun in the media to look that way?
That's a great question. So I definitely think there's a high injury rate if you compare it to, you know, other things, especially where this is a non-contact sport. You know, you hear about injury rates in like football or other sports, but you think, well, running, you have injury rates in running when you know, there's not any contact between people, but it is a high injury rate. And, you know, it can be as high as 65% of all runners will experience an injury annually. And even up to 90% of anyone training for a marathon will get some sort of injury. And so one of the biggest reasons why we think that is the fact that when we run, all we do is we use the same muscles over and over and over again. Whereas like in soccer or basketball, when I'm running, I run a few steps and then I cut sideways or backwards, or I'm transitioning quickly. So I'm using different muscles at different times, and so my same muscles aren't constantly working over and over and over again. Like when I run, especially, you know, let's say a half marathon, a marathon, that's a long time to just use the same muscles constantly, one after one after one. And so those muscles are just slowly getting torn down and broken up. And, you know, that's how we want to build muscle, is to get muscles broken down, but we need to have recovery time, which is a lot of the things that time doesn't happen, is we're missing that recovery because we just step over step over step, and we just do too much too fast on those muscles where they're not getting enough exposure to other things.
Okay, so would you say that, you talked about doing repetitive motion, you know, running is very repetitive, but if we do those other supplemental exercises and strengthen other muscles doing other exercises, that will generally help runners?
Yeah, generally, you know, and that's where we get into the whole idea of cross training, and making that a part of your routine. And I think that's definitely important. And we can talk more about that as we go on through this podcast. But one thing for sure is, just because you cross train only doesn't mean that means the next day you can run 100 miles. You know, if you're doing that every day, you still have to be smart with your training.
Okay, so a lot of that is about, you know, still building up gradually like we hear. And do you believe in that 10% rule or...
So we believe in that at this point, just because we don't have anything else that's proven. That's one of my goals, is to actually try to find a way to actually prove something or show something that is safe. You know, because I think all runners, if they can increase by 20% and do it safely, they're going to want to do that. And so at this point, yeah, I think the 10% is a great rule to follow, but we don't necessarily have anything that proves that at this point. But yeah, I think it's a great rule to follow on your increasing, absolutely.
Okay, so we hear about new runners are more likely to get injured, and that would kind of go along with what you were saying earlier about, you know, repetitive motion and not being used to it too much too soon. So why do you think other reasons newer runners tend to get injured quicker?
Well, I think one of the reasons for that statistic is... you know, when they take a poll of these runners, they take a poll of who's gotten injured. And one of the things is that novice runners, they're more likely to quit once they get an injury. And so it's almost like a survival of the fittest idea. So you get all these new runners, they're running, they get hurt, and only those who don't get hurt move on. And now they increase the pool of experienced runners. And so you do have a lot of higher incident rate of the newer runners, but... also, I think it's, you know, the reason why it's kind of skewed is because of that. But the reason why I think new runners get injured so fast is I think one reason is their expectations. Whether they're, you know, they get a new itch in their belly, they say, hey, I need to lose 20 pounds. I'm going to go run. And so they haven't got off the couch for, you know, it's been a regular thing. They've been on the couch for, who knows, 3 years, 5 years, whatever the case may be. And then the first thing is they go out and they try to run 5 miles. And they may not be ready or up to that, or their muscles not be ready for that. And like you said, that repetitive motion where they're not necessarily giving their muscles any break in between their training time, it's something that's going to really hurt them. So definitely it's their expectation, and then expectation of either distance or also speed. You know, they think, okay, well, I've got a friend who she ran her first half marathon in 2 hours, so my goal is to beat her. And so they want to beat her because they've got this little underlying competition within them. And so now they're trying to train. And maybe they could do a two-hour half marathon, but maybe not initially. You know, they need to work up to that. And then they also need to vary their training, and they may not know about the variation of training. And so they may be running at a two-hour pace their whole training time and never go slower, or have maybe some days where they decrease a little bit. And so I think their training errors or knowledge of that is a big reason why they may get injured so fast initially.
Yeah, that would make sense. And we actually put a big focus on taking some of your runs easy to make sure that your body does have that time to recover. And I think that would match on well with you, what you just said. But what other advice would you give to new runners then, if they are looking to, you know, stay healthy and move forward in a progressive way that's not not going to put them at risk of injury?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think initially it's establishing expectations and establishing them realistically. Some people just say, "Oh, my goal is to finish," and that's a good goal. But I think at the same time, you still want to kind of give yourself an understanding of what time you want to do, because whether you're just training and you don't really have an idea of your timing, you'll either train too hard, or when it comes race day, you're like, I'm just going to finish, and then they get excited with all the hype, and then they get caught up with everyone running, and they start running fast, and then halfway through their race, they're injured because they weren't keeping the same pace that they were training at or different things like that. So I think number one is establishing an expectation and making it a realistic one. I think that Jeff has had a good pace calculator where you can kind of gauge where, you know, your 5K time or something, and then you can kind of translate that into how much a half marathon, what your time should be with that. And I think that's a good way to start to kind of see, okay, this is my first marathon or half marathon. And I would say not even your fastest 5K. I'd say, you know, maybe a medium 5K pace, and then kind of put that in and gauge that for your half marathon. I think another thing with the injury prevention is thinking about long-term. Yes, this is your first race, but you're going to have more races. You know, there's going to be more races where you're going to get faster and you're going to get better and you're going to improve. But why don't you just get this one and get out of your way, but use it, do it smartly, do it slowly. So there's that, I think, with the expectations. And then I think you want to make sure that you are varying your training, like we talked about. A lot of people, you know, someone who's hasn't ran and then they go to running 5 days a week, even if it's just 1 mile a day, can still get injured because their body's not used to that exposure. So maybe working into the running on a mount, not only with distance, but on a mount during a weekly training time as well, maybe 3 days a week, 2 days a week, whatever the case may be initially, and then add your cross-training days in there so that you can build those muscles and build your core to have a strong base to work and propel yourself off of. And then I guess this is probably a good time to kind of mention that there's a study that's been put out there about training with the use of parallel shoe use is what I like to call it, or you have multiple shoes to wear during your training. And this may bring a lot of the supporters of the runners to roll their eyes because they probably think the runners already have way too many shoes as it is. But this may be one that and it's just a new study. I mean, it's not like it's a solid, this is 100% the way to go. But what they've shown is they did a 22-week kind of prospective study. So they followed these people from the beginning to the end, and they didn't have any previous injuries. And then they would see what they did in their training, and they showed that those who used more than one pair of shoes during their training had a decreased risk for injury. They said even in the study, 39% lower risk. And the thought behind that is that it's not the same exact shoe. They're having different types of shoes. Maybe one's a 12 millimeter, one's a 4 millimeter drop, and it's just different shoes so that it's just so much of a slight change that the way that the muscles function during the run is enough different that it allows for some of the other tissues to heal. And so, you know, at this point, you know, I would say that might be definitely one of the things that a new runner could consider is definitely, A, getting some good shoes. And a good shoe means something that feels good on your foot. It doesn't necessarily have to be a science of what type of arch you have to what type of shoe you should get. It's something, it needs to feel good. When you put it on, you need to feel like this is a match made in heaven. You know, you need to feel like I'm walking on a cloud, whatever the case may be. So you want to do that. And then if you want to find another pair of shoe that you can use and alternate throughout your training, they said that those who had the reduced injury rate, they used one shoe no more than 58% of the time. So they still had their favorite shoe that they would use for most of the time, but they would vary it out. So that's one way that I think a new runner, just given that study, and that study was by Malasu and his group in 2013. It was published online. So I think that's one way that they could definitely consider. And we could probably start talking about cross-training right now. Does that sound okay to you?
Yeah, that's fine. First, I just want to say that's really interesting what you just said about the shoes. And I'm kind of glad to hear you say that because I rotate my shoes and I've always believed in that and the importance of it. But, you know, I've never heard a study that actually proves that it is worthwhile and it's something that you should do. And I'm glad to hear you say that. But, yeah, let's transition into cross-training and its importance.
Okay, I will say another thing, just like you said, and I think a lot of people, they vary their shoes just for the fact that they want to see, like, the cushioning return, and I don't know if that was so much of the reason as why they thought, but more it was just the idea that it was just the different, what we call neuromuscular function, or way that the brain and the muscles are working together with your running. So, but I think cross training is an important one because, you know, I'll get runners into my clinic, and first of all, I have to applaud any runner that comes into the clinic because, as you're aware, runners like to run, you know. So if someone comes into my clinic, I have to applaud them just for being in there because, first of all, they don't want to be there, but they do want to run, but they don't want to hear you can't run or different things like that. And my real goal, I want to get people running and I want to keep people running. And that's why we're here talking about injury prevention, is so that they can. But so runners like to run. And so when we talk about cross training, you know, you sometimes will get the roll of the eyes and people are like, really? You think we need to cross train, you know? And I have a couple quotes that I won't necessarily say who they're by, but these are quotes that just kind of show that there's some dispute out there about cross training. You know, you have some running coaches that'll say, you know, I can spot the runners who have a gym membership because their stride is out of line. And he says, those who do nothing but run have pure symmetry because they have only strengthened the muscles needed for running. And so as we talked about before, like, yeah, you need to strengthen those muscles, but if that's all you're doing and you're doing it too quickly, then those muscles are going to get tired and they're going to get a strain. And so one of the things I like to say, and this is for novice runners and experienced runners, excuse me, but there's a couple studies out there that show that, you know, a stronger core, there's one that says a stronger core can reduce or decrease your run time in the 5,000 meters. So they took a study and, you know, showed those with the core strength, and then they showed that getting that stronger can reduce your run time in the 5,000 meter. But also in that same study about from Malasu that talked about strength training or the parallel shoe use, also mentioned some strength training and some participation in other sports. And they found that with participation in other sport activities next to running, so doing it together, they also found to be protective against running-related injuries. So, you know, that ability to cross-train or to use other activities, and cross-training can be anything. I mean, it can be swimming, it can be biking, it can be hiking, it can be like a high-intensity interval workout, it can be rowing. I mean, there's boxing, Pilates, jump rope. There's just a million things that it could be. The important thing is getting different muscles, different exercises. And at the same time, we're kind of working on our coordination and also our core strength that then helps us and translates back to running. But one other study that showed that said strength training, and that was explosive and or heavy weight training, improves long distance running performance and or running economy. And so I think that it's important that runners know that strength training is essential, or not necessarily strength training, but just cross training is essential to help them run. You know, and if you're injured, you can't run. You know, so that's the thing, is like, you know, do I take time off to keep my body healthy so that I continue to run, or I just continue to run and get hurt? So I think it's important that cross training is considered in there, and should be something that's not necessarily planned at the end of your training or when in need, but should be planned during the course of it, you know. So I think that's important, one thing. And you can see both improvements in injury prevention and also in improvement or time improvement things. And that's just with the ability to stay healthy, you can run faster as it is. So regardless of other studies that show that they actually improve your time, it just helps staying healthy, which keeps you running.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's so important. And I just want to differentiate for a minute. You talked about having a strong core, but I just want you to explain a little that, because I did not realize this until a few months ago, that when you say strong core, that doesn't necessarily mean you can, you know, hold a plank for 10 minutes or do 100 sit-ups. You're not talking about, you know, getting that six-pack look. This is like the entire trunk as a whole, and, you know, not just exercises that focus on those what people traditionally consider abs, but the entire trunk. So could you just, you know, reiterate that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, yeah, the term core needs to be defined, and that's in multiple disciplines. The term core needs to be defined, and that does include your tummy, which a lot of people think about, like you said, the six packs and the abs of steel and all that kind of stuff. But it also includes your back muscles, which help to hold you erect, and then an important part that is often neglected is your glute muscles right around there, because that still is stabilizing your pelvis. And if that pelvis isn't stable, then you don't have anything to grow off of or build from. So, and like you said, you know, you can plank for 10 or 15 minutes, but is that going to translate to running? Do you know what I mean? And so it's one thing to definitely build statically your core, but you also got to consider building dynamically, because when you run, that's what you do. You're having a dynamic movement, so this core needs to be strong to push off of. It's kind of like if you've got a slippery floor, a wood floor, and then you've got a blanket on top of the wood floor, and you go to push off of it, the blanket kind of slips out, and you don't really move. And that's the same with our core. If our muscles aren't able to push or propel ourselves forward against something, which is our core, our strong core, then A, we're not going to move, or B, we're going to move incorrectly and cause some injury or some compensation somewhere up down the chain. And so I think, like you said, it's important that we consider the whole trunk. So that's, you know, even I'd say upper back. So, you know, from pecs down or shoulder down to our gluteal region, and to do that statically and then consider doing that dynamically as well.
Yeah, okay. That's a great analogy and way of looking at it. That's interesting. I like the way you specified that there. So let's talk about injuries just a little bit, as that is one of your specialities, is working with runners. So runners are notoriously bad at ignoring pain and running through injuries till it gets to a point where we need time off. I mean, I know I have a good friend who's an athletic trainer, and he used to hate working with runners because he used to say, "You're so stupid, like, why do you keep going?" And is there any reason why you think runners, you know, do run through pain, especially as you get to see both sides of the story? You see the physical therapist side and you see the running side, so you're kind of in the middle there.
Well, yeah, and I think I don't want to downplay runners for that, because, you know, if I were to consider a runner who keeps running and is injured versus someone who sits on the couch and, you know, is gaining weight and really adding to this obesity epidemic that we see going on, you know, not that I'm a proponent for, you know, injuries and keeping running and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, I got to pay it to them that they're running. They're out there, they're being active, and that's important. And I think that's part of the reason why they do it, is because a lot of runners identify themselves by the way that, and their ability to run. You know, I mean, if you had a running convention, everyone would love to have a sign on themselves that says, "Hi, my name's Jeremy. I run 50 miles a week, and I've ran 20 marathons." You know, I mean, that's, they would want that on their name tag, because that's kind of how they identify themselves. You know, it's part of who they are. And, you know, some people have come from a long history of maybe obesity, and then they've used running as their mechanism to get back into it. And I've heard people who say, you know, if I take a day off, I'm so nervous that I will lose my motivation to get back into it. And you know, that's a real thing. And so I'm not here to downplay runners for that. But at the same time, I do know that there's long-term benefits from taking a break or cross training or whatever the case may be, that the situation for each individual person. But like I said, I'm a runner myself, and so I understand where they're coming from. I'm not just a physical therapist who thinks, you know, that everything's black and white and this is how you do it, because that's not the case. And I think that there's a lot of value that can come from healthy activities of life, running being one of them. And so I think that A, it's a part of who they are, and B, I think it's that competitive drive that's also within a runner. And so, you know, they've got, you know, X race in 3 months, and if they take a week off now or 2 weeks off now, are they going to be ready for it? And whether that's to beat their own time, because that's one of the great things about runners too, is we're all seeking our own PR, you know. And that's what I love about running. I love the running community, because I can be as fast or slow, but I go to this running community, I go to this race, and we're all friends, because we're all happy to be running, and I can beat my own time. And then there's also times that we're racing against our friends or other competitors that may be the case, but that competitive nature obviously drives the injury rate as well. And that's actually one of the shown risk factors for injury, is a competitive nature.
Yeah, oh yeah, and I could not agree more with everything you just said there. I don't even know which one to pick on, because I think every runner listening was probably nodding their head right there in agreement with you. So then when it comes to pains and injuries in this kind of situation, how do What's the best way for runners to know which pains they should run through, which pains to give maybe 2 or 3 minutes and see if it gets better, and which pains, all right, stop right now. How do you kind of know what to do with those?
Yeah, and that's a great question, and one that, you know, is often asked. And if I could get into every one of my patients' like bodies and feel their pain, I would love it, because I could then say, okay, yeah, this pain, you can go through a little bit more. But I think kind of a rule of thumb that I like to have, you know, is you got to think about how much it hurts, and when it hurts, and where it hurts. So you got to kind of think about those three things during a run. So if I'm initially running and whoa, I'm getting this weird pain, but if I give it a few minutes as I'm continuing to run, and it kind of goes away, That's great. So we can look at that. But then the next thing we need to consider is, when I finish, is that now plaguing my body the rest of the day? You know, so it's not only during a run that we need to consider, but it's also the rest of the day that we also need to consider, or weeks. And so obviously if you've got an injury that's running from running, or you feel it while you're running, or even you don't feel it while you're running, but it gets worse after you run, and then that continues throughout the next 3 days, then obviously that's something that we want to say, okay, we need to step back a little bit, and we need to find out what this is and what we need to do to change that. So, and then you want to look at location. You know, if you're tender on a bone, like any stress fracture, you know, that's one that's we really have no ability to play with. I mean, if you've got a stress fracture, that's one thing you just have to say, you've got to put your hands up and say, okay, I need a break. And that's hard to do, because there are some injuries, you know, maybe a tendonitis of some sort that you might be okay to push a little through, maybe decrease your training time and things like that. But like a stress fracture, when you get one of those and you feel you get that and you'll feel it and it's sharp and it hurts and every time you land you feel it and it's not getting any better, you know, that's something you want to say, okay, I need to go get this looked at. And of course, I'll put a plug in for my physical therapy peeps that, you know, anytime you have an injury, you know, you're more than welcome to obviously go to a therapist and they'll help you. And one of the things that, you know, this doesn't apply to everyone, but if you're close to us here in Mountainland, you can come in and we'll do a free screen on anyone and we'll just kind of quickly assess you and then we can kind of give you a guide on whether you should continue to run or whether you need to back off a little bit. So that's one of the perks that we offer at Mountainland Physical Therapy to people, is that if they're needing to come in for a free injury screen, it's not a full evaluation, but we'll screen them and then kind of give them an idea on what to do. But you want to look at your daily activities is really a guide that I think how you feel the rest of your day is an indication on what you need to do with running pain.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And I will put a link to your clinic. What town is that in? In Utah?
So I'm out of Kaysville, Utah.
Okay.
Is where my clinic's at, yeah.
Okay, so if you are in the Kaysville area, you can go get a screening. But I will put links to Jeremy's clinic in addition to our pace calculator that you talked about a little bit earlier, and anything else in our show notes, which will be at runnersconnect.net/RC50. Yeah, so you would say go to a physical therapist. And we did actually write an article about this a few weeks ago with how easy it is to get direct access based on your state to a physical therapist. So we'll also put a link to that, which will help. Do you think runners have a higher tolerance for pain than most other athletes in other sports?
That's a great question. And I wish I have read this study. This was just one of my colleagues, and I find this study really interesting. And I don't know the whole logistics of it, but they took a little, kind of like a cleat, and they stuck it on people's shins, and then they pumped up like a blood pressure cuff, so to speak, around it, and they wanted to see who could tolerate the most with different sports. And I think the people who had more contact sports tolerated a little more pain, but I don't know that really correlates with the question per se. I do think that they have more, this is only subjective, of course, but I do think that they have a maybe not a high tolerance to pain, but maybe a more internal drive. And I think that might be one, because Running's individual. You know, if you're hurt, you can have your teammates kind of pick you up on other sports, but running's just you, you know, and so you've got to be there. And so those personal goals, you've got a little bit more drive to achieve them as a runner, I think.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I think it can also work both ways in that because it's all on you, you can either push it aside out of your head and say, oh, it's not that bad. But then you can also take it the other way because it's just you in your mind and you can't rely on anyone else. You can kind of spin it out of control. And I know I've been guilty in the past when something hurts, my mind goes into overdrive. So I think we can be both good and bad with that kind of situation. And I think a lot of our listeners are going to love that you keep bringing up these studies and articles because we really like the science and the details behind thing rather than just saying, oh, you know, my friend told me that this, you know, you're actually bringing up hard evidence here. So that's really great to hear. And I'm sure people will enjoy listening to that. So what about if a runner has like a big race coming up? You mentioned that earlier and, you know, they really don't want to take time off. But is there anything they can do if it is, you know, getting close and even a day or two, it's just going to spin that mind into overdrive? And anything you can recommend for those situations?
We'll probably need to put another link here for one of Jeff's articles. Yep. On the amount of like VO2 max capacity loss or aerobic threshold loss that he's kind of put out before. You know, given a week off, you know, your actual loss is pretty minimal. So, you know, I think that's one of the things. And I think that another thing is you know, it really is considering where you're at in your training, you know. And I think all injuries need to be treated seriously, but individual as well, because, you know, if you've got someone who's trying to qualify for the Olympics versus someone who's just trying to complete their first marathon, no offense to the person who's trying to complete their first marathon, but those are different different scenarios. You know, the person who's going to complete their first marathon, there's going to be another marathon almost every weekend of the year. You know, you can easily get multiple marathons every weekend. So it's not like if they miss this is the end of the world. But at the same time, for that elite athlete, they may ruin their running career depending on it, you know. But I think that sometimes it's important that they can think about, A, is my goal to finish, or A, is my goal to get a certain time? And if they can shift their mind to the fact that, oh, I just need to finish. You know, let's say they have 3 weeks till their race. And they have this new pain that's been coming on for the past couple weeks. But they, you know, they can first rule out that it's not a stress fracture. And then they can kind of alter their training significantly to the point where, okay, I'm not going to get my PR in 3 weeks, but I'm going to finish the race. You know, and so if they can alter that mindset a little bit, it's still an accomplishment. You know, definitely, and I think hopefully this will help runners realize that, you know, being able to say, okay, I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to be smart for my future health. I'm still going to finish my race. And that's the accomplishment, is finishing my race. Even despite this pain that I had, I'm still going to be able to finish my race. But then they can alter their training, you know. And like we said, if they take a week off and maybe cross-train, you know, get on the bike, keep that aerobic fitness up, and try to get the strengthening where you can strengthen without pain and still keep your running muscles strong, then, you know, it's not going to be their best time, but they're going to finish, and that's okay. And they can pat themselves on the back because they listen to their body, knowing that next year they can do it again and they can get better, you know. And I think that's an accomplishment. If we can get a little paradigm shift in our runners on how we think a little bit when that comes to that, I think that's important.
Oh, no, I think that's a great point you bring up there, especially because we as runners can be guilty of thinking, you know, this is it, I have to do it now. But like you said, there's races all the time, and even for elite runners, there's always going to be another race. I mean, I tend to get caught up in that myself, thinking, you know, when's it my turn? When I have to do it this time? But I think everyone can kind of learn from, there's always going to be another opportunity. And, you know, unless you're kind of in the situation where you're, you know, 38 years old coming to the end and you're an elite runner trying to qualify for your first Olympics, then maybe you're kind of getting towards the point where you're getting to the end of your limit there. But for the most part, we can always keep improving and there's always other opportunities. So I think that's a good point you bring up, because we can often forget about that and kind of think,
spiral ourselves out of control and think that there's never going to be anything else. So that's a good point to bring up there. And so what point would you say people would need to pull themselves out of a race, like particularly a marathon or even further? Is there a situation where, you know, it's really not worth if you're going to limp your way through 26 miles and then need, you know, 3 months off, as opposed to if you stop now, you may only need 2 or 3?
Yeah, that's a great question and definitely a golden question to always answer. But stress fracture, for sure. If you've got a stress fracture, you got to pull the plug. There's no question about that. And that can be in multiple places. It can be in your shin. It can be up in your femur, right up by your hip. There's lots of different places where a stress fracture can occur. But I also think that if you can't walk 2 steps without having significant pain, obviously running 13 miles or 26.2 miles or whatever the case is, that's going to be a little bit of an issue too. But I think how to decide to pull the plug or not, that's always a difficult question. But it's when you are running and you're crying because of pain within the first mile. And sometimes those tears can become because of emotions. You know, I mean, there's a lot of emotional tie behind it. But when it's a pain cry, that's obviously a state where you've got to just say, hey, I've got to pull the plug here. I've got to be a little bit smarter.
Yeah, totally. Definitely. And it's funny you mentioned that. My first marathon experience, I know I should have pulled the plug. The week of the race, I couldn't walk on the Tuesday, and I needed to race on the Sunday. And, you know, everything went wrong, but that was my stubbornness, and I did have the crying tears, and nope, I was going to do it, and lots of mistakes learned, but I think a lesson many of us have learned, and
yes.
It's funny you brought that up there. So then when it comes to injuries and recovering, so you know a lot about returning from injuries, and are there any specific recommendations or thoughts you have on returning to running? Is that something a lot of our listeners are very interested in?
And that's excellent. And this is, I think, an essential part in a runner's training, because if they've committed themselves to taking some time off, like I said, we've got to applaud them for that. But B, now this is crucial for them to continue in their running career, is how they return. Because too many people will either come back too fast, either with speed or distance, and then they get hurt again. Whether that's in the same spot or in a different spot, now they're injured again, and now they think, well, I'm not meant to be a runner. Or I can't do this anymore, my career's over, this is my next injury, and it's just perpetuating on top. And it can really be mind-numbing and boggling and hard that they now they just give up running altogether because they've had too many injuries in a row. And so this is a critical stage for a runner, is this initial return to running. And so at this point, there is not a science on how to return. Along with the 10% rule, I'd like to figure out a way that we can say, okay, if you have had a stress fracture, and there is actually a study now that's been put out on an idea of how to return after a stress fracture and different running things like that, there's not, but I'd like to have all these different diagnoses and that says, okay, X, Y, and Z, this means you do this, this, and this for return to running. At this point, there isn't one. And so guidelines that I like to give is, initially, don't forget the walk run. It's important that, you know, when you get back into running, that walk run is important because, first of all, it gives your muscles, instead of that constant running over and over that we talked about at the beginning, now it gives it some time for walking muscles to kind of kick in and work at a different angle and different joint mechanics than running. And so that's important that you get the walk run in and know that in a few weeks you'll be running again the whole time, and that's okay. So remembering the walk run in your return. Two, recalling or making out a plan on how to get back in. And sometimes I like to base it off of a 30-minute return. So, I mean, this is, especially if you've been out for, you know, 3-4 weeks or greater, then, you know, you really got to scale things back. 6 weeks especially. So I like to use like a 30-minute guide. So when I get runners returning or myself returning after an injury, I like to think of time instead of distance. Because if I'm going to run 1 mile versus run 10 minutes or 8 minutes, however the case may be, 1 mile, I'm not going to control how I run. I'm going to, oh man, I'm doing feeling good, I'm going to run. So I like to return in minutes instead of distance. So run, walk, return in minutes instead of distance. And you can set your goal at like 20 to 30 minutes initially. And then your walk run ratio starts at, you know, probably 8 minutes walking and 2 minutes running. And then as the weeks go on, you continue to alter that. And now you're at 6 minutes and 3 minutes. And then you're at 4 minutes walking and 5 minutes running. And then these ties start to change. And then once you can get to 30 consecutive minutes running, then we can start to build up our distance and time and things like that. But I like to also consider the fact that in my return to running process, let's say, you know, I started with this, you know, 8 and 2, and now I'm running, I'm walking for 3 minutes and running for 7 minutes, okay? And I do that, and that's when I kind of start to feel an injury again. I'd like to back up, you know, a few days where I ran with no pain, where I was back at, say, 4 minutes and 6 minutes instead of 3 minutes and seven, and I felt good at the 4 minutes and 6 minutes, so I'll back up to there, and I'll run a couple days at that, and then I'll start to try to advance again for the 3 minutes and 7 minutes. So I think it's important that when, if you start to feel that, that niggling injury just starts to come around again, just back up a couple days, run there, so, and then start to progress again to just get those muscles stronger again.
That's a great point right there. I really would like to highlight that, because I think a lot of runners go through this where they're returning from an injury and you are at that point where, yeah, you're only at 10 minutes or whatever, and you get some kind of pain, and a lot of people freak out and, oh, what am I going to do? I obviously need more time off. And they, you know, either may take 2-3 more weeks off or just absolutely spiral out of control mentally. But I think that's a great point you brought up right there, that you don't have to, that doesn't mean that you have to start from scratch again. You just have to backpedal a little. And yeah, okay, if it still is bugging you at the lower minutes, then fine, you know, maybe back off even more. But I think that's great that you mentioned that you don't have to, it's all is not lost if you feel even a little bit of just feeling it. And sometimes it can be difficult to tell, you know, those kind of ghost pains, whether it actually hurts or whether you're just worrying about it. But I think that's a really important point to bring up right there. So thank you for that. So any other thoughts on whether runners should increase their other activities, or you talked about the importance of cross training, or whether during that return to running time what they should include in addition to the building up their running?
Great point. And I'll take it one more step back, not only to include in their return to running, but in their time off. You know, I mean, this in your time off, you've really got to you've got to be motivated and say, hey, I've got this time off, I'm really going to use this time to maybe do the things that I'm not normally doing, you know, get that core strong again. But, you know, cross training is important. It's not only for muscle strength, but also just your heart. Your heart needs that pumping, and it needs to be ready for you to run again. And so if you have an injury and you can bike and it doesn't hurt you, great, get on the bike. If you can swim and it doesn't hurt you, get up, swim, you know. And granted, it's not running, and it's going to take more time or less time depending on the activity than running. You know, sometimes biking to get the cardiovascular fitness level that running takes, you may have to be on the bike a little bit longer than you would have normally for a regular daily run, you know. So you got to consider that kind of stuff and just kind of pay attention to your fatigue level and your exertional level, where you kind of feel, okay, yeah, this feels like a 5 mile easy run, and I, you know, this is about how long it took me to get there, and kind of consider that. But yeah, especially on your time off, and then as you kind of build up back to your time of running again, you want to start to add a little bit more of maybe agility activities into your cross training before you get back into running. Maybe try some skipping or some jump roping and see if that hurts. You know, if that doesn't hurt, then great. We've got a good indication that we're getting to the place where we're going to be able to start to run again. And then as you run, like you said, I didn't mention this, but I think it's important that if you're returning to running and you're just back after 6 weeks off or so, you need a day in between of running. So we talked about the time, we talked about the other factors that we want to consider, but we also want to consider a day off in between your running so that you can have those muscles time to heal and recover before you start again the next day. And so on those days off, you can definitely do some core workout or an aerobic video or biking or whatever the case may be, whatever a second passion is of yours that you enjoy doing. Try to get on that and do that in your time. I'm glad you brought that up. Good point.
Oh, no problem. And I'm glad you mentioned about, you know, you can do a variety of activities. And I think one thing that I notice a lot is runners tend to associate cross-training with injuries. I know I did for a very long time. And actually, to be honest, in some ways, I still do. I associate biking, especially in elliptical, with cross-training. But I think it's important for runners to find, like you said, a second passion or something that they enjoy and don't mind doing. I mean, for me, I tried the elliptico recently and I loved it. I would do that for pleasure, let alone for training. So I think it's important to find something that you do enjoy. And it doesn't necessarily, if you are trying to, you know, focus on a key race, you have to take a week off and you have a big race coming up. Yes, okay, pool running or elliptical may be the only option. But if you're not at that point where you are desperately trying to hold on to your fitness, you can do other things as long as you enjoy it, and you're more likely to keep it up if you find something you enjoy. So I like that you said, you know, find something that's like a second passion, because I think that is important.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, I think it's important that it's the cross training, and this is in the last article I wrote for you, the Run Utah magazine. I put in there that, you know, it's something you got to plan in there. It's not something that you have to put in on second thought or in emergency. You want to have it in there included. Like you said, it's not something just for when I'm injured, cross training. You want to put it in there so you don't get injured.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I will put a link to, do you have something on that you could, the article that you just talked about? That I could share? Okay.
Yep.
I'll put that on the show notes as well then. So once a runner is back to being healthy and back running strong again, are there any other little things you can recommend for people to stay healthy? I know I try to run on grass or soft ground at least a few miles a week. And then you could maybe talk about shoes or stretching, whether to stretch or not stretch, whatever. What other things would you recommend for people to avoid injuries?
Great question. And so a lot of what there are a lot of myths out there on what causes injuries in runners, and they actually did a study on what runners' beliefs on injury risks were, on what their risks for injury were. And so what they found that runners believed was that this is the runner's perception. They took a poll, they had people survey, and they talked about not stretching, excessive training, not warming up, lack of strength, wearing the wrong shoes, not respecting the body's limitations, and foot type changes. So that's what the runners perceived. And so what actually is shown, and not that those are wrong, but there's no hard evidence to support all of those. What has been shown is running experience is a risk for injury. Weekly mileage or intensity, so either a rapid increase or exceed, and even, and this is a hard one for runners too, but exceeding 40 miles a week puts you at increased injury risk, and that's been shown in studies. And so a previous injury also puts you at risk of injury. And actually, stress fractures, if you've had a stress fracture, you're six times more likely to get another stress fracture. So
wow.
You really got to be careful with that. And then competitive training motive. So, you know, I don't know that there's any, like, pearls that are the exact answer other than, like we talked about, like, use your cross training. You can also vary your shoes, like we talked about a little earlier. One of the things that you can also consider is and it depends on the injury, and this is sometimes again where a physical therapist may come into play, and I think as one of the podcasts was earlier about a video analysis.
Yep.
of a runner and things, you know, that's really helpful. And so if you've had an injury, going to a therapist to get your gait analyzed to show, you know, was it just too much too fast, or do I actually have like a biomechanical fault that's leading to this? Because if it is, let's get that changed and let's get you running again with a new alteration of gait. And so a study showed that people who had less injury had less force that they ground reaction force. So that's like when I hit the ground, you know, one of Newton's laws is every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So when I hit the ground, I'm not only hitting the ground's hitting me back. And so they showed that those who had less injury had a decreased ground reaction force. So they had that going back. And so one of the ways that's kind of a hot topic out there with gait training is increasing your cadence. And so if you increase your cadence, the idea is that you get a shorter step length and you're landing that your foot closer to your body, which then allows for less ground reaction force. And Heiderscheidt and his group kind of really started this whole idea of the increased cadence. And I have to put a caveat on this, that not every injury is caused because of increased ground reaction force. But sometimes that can be the case. And like I said, the study showed that those with decreased ground reaction force had a decreased injury rate or decreased risk for injury. And so one of the things you can consider is as you're going back, you can kind of alter your gait a little bit, maybe with a little faster cadence, and not even for the whole time, maybe just for a little bit. And they found that they, in Heiderscheidt's group's study, they show just a 5% increase in your stride or your frequency can decrease your ground reaction force. And so especially like with a stress fracture or something where it may have been from a ground reaction force or excessive load through there, that may be something to consider, is increasing that stride rate a little bit. So you're just turning over your feet, and it's not significantly faster, but it's just a hair faster. So that way you get that decreased force as you're running. So something to consider as well. And, you know, as you're just working back into things and you're only running 3 minutes at a time, that's a great time to try new gait, you know, where you're just altering things a little bit and listening to your body and kind of paying attention to it. So it's a good time to really try to alter things a little bit.
Yeah, sounds like it. And that's a good point about focusing on those things while you are in your downtime or in the recovery time, you know, so that when you do get to the point where you are at full speed and full training again, your body is used to those changes. So I think that's another good point to bring up. And what about with shoes? You hear about you should put a certain number of miles on the shoes. Do you think that's less applicable now with the kind of technology the shoes have, or should injury prone runners still kind of keep the number of miles on their shoes on the lower end?
That's a great question too. You know, the thicker shoe was designed to help reduce that ground reaction force that we just talked about. And you know, they have a curve that we look at for how much ground reaction force we're obtaining or how much force is going through our limb in our gait cycle when we're running. And they did show that initial spike was decreased with the thicker shoe. The way that they determined the 300 or 500 miles for your shoes to change over was at least the way that the study that I understood is that they just took a machine and they just pounded the shoe, just kept pounding it over and over again, to equal 300 or 500 miles or whatever the case may be, and that's how they decided to say, you know, your shoe breaks down around 500 miles, and there wasn't a significant change between the 300 mile mark and the 500 mile mark. And so a lot of times, like you said, you know, technology is changing, shoes are improving. But I also think it's important that you just kind of let the responsiveness of your shoe kind of guide you. You know, I think it's a good idea to consider that, but you'd hate to put someone in a new, brand new shoe when they're returning and it's one that maybe that they're not feeling good in or something, and now they're going to change their gait completely and they're going to cause issues just from that. So I'd hate to put them in a brand new shoe just for that reason only. But you want to kind of pay attention to your responsiveness is kind of what we say to your shoe and how much you feel it still gives you, you know, as you're running. You can tell, like, when your shoe gets old, you're like, it doesn't quite have the same spring, kind of the same effect that you feel the return on it. And so there's not a science to that. But, you know, definitely shoes can wear down and they can cause injury. And if that's part of the case, if you think you've got an old shoe, I mean, it's not a bad idea to consider changing that out.
Okay, well, that's good to know, and I think we can all learn. Again, it seems to be with a lot of things, it's all about you, what you, your personal body can take, and learning about who you are. I think that's such a huge aspect of running that we can often take for granted, that there is no blanket yes, no answer. And it'd be nice if we had one of those, you know, flow charts where it's, do you have this, yes, no, and then go off in this direction, but unfortunately, that isn't the case. A lot of it is just taking in what you feel yourself and you're comfortable with. And I think you've brought that home a lot in this interview so far. So that's all the questions I have for today, but we do have a question from one of our Runners Connect athletes who would like to know about running as you age. And we all know that you know, you slow down as you age, you need more time to bounce back. But why do you think, we've shown that in one of our articles that older runners are less susceptible to injuries because you're moving slower. But why is it that older runners need to be more careful for injuries than, you know, when they are younger?
Yeah, that's a good question. And like you talked about, I mean, our body goes through a lot of physiological changes as we age. There's multiple reasons why that. One of the things is our tissue makeup, the makeup of our tissues, what they're comprised of, changes as we age. And so not only, I mean, I think you said you can see a decreased risk of injury for those who are older. And I think, like you said, you hit home a little bit that they're, I think, one, they've learned their body a little bit, like we've talked about. And so they're more able to listen to it. But two, they may be at a little slower time. But the position or the area of injury rate actually changes. And you see a lot of males with calf injuries more as they age. And that's part due to the, we talked about the collagen or the tissue, the fibers that compose the tissue, the changes that come with that. And so I think that, you know, as you age, you know, first of all, power to you, because I hope I'm 101 and I run a marathon. You know, I mean, that's my goal, is I want to be able to do that, because that I get so much inspiration from those runners who have kept themselves healthy enough and the ability to run as they've continued to age. But it's important to know, like you said, is your frequency of running has maybe got to alter a little bit, and possibly that's one of the reasons too, is their lifestyle now has changed where they maybe have more responsibilities in their life, and so they're not hitting the everyday running. They maybe are running a few days a week, and so now their tissues have time to heal a little bit more in between each run.
Oh, yeah, I guess that would make a lot more sense, especially as you get to that point where you are retired and you're a master's runner, you can take a bit more time between your runs and really think about when you're going to place them rather than cramming things in, which people tend to do. So that's all the questions I have for today. I just want to ask you one more question that I ask all the guests for this year. And if you could describe one word for what you would like to achieve, believe, be in 2015, what would that be and why?
One word that I could, yep, that I want to achieve? Wow, that's a hard question.
That's the most difficult one yet, huh?
I think true.
That's a good one.
I want to be true to who I am, my beliefs, my desire, my visions. So I want to be true and stay to that, true to my family, all that kind of stuff. I think true would be the one word I would try to choose.
That's great. No, that's a wonderful word. And it's just really been interesting to learn the words people have chosen. They're all very deep and thoughtful words rather than just, you know, simple things. So it's great to hear that. And well, thank you so much, Jeremy. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I've learned so much. This has been fascinating, and I'm sure people will really enjoy listening to this. We've got a lot of links for people to go out check on, so you can go to that at runnersconnect.net/RC50. And thank you again, Jeremy, for your time.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you. I've had a great time.
And there you have it. That was a lot of helpful information. I learned so much, and I feel so much better about being a runner now and what to expect. I love that Jeremy showed us the science, but still had the empathy to understand that we are out there doing what we love. I hope you got as much from that interview as I did. Thank you for listening today. If you did enjoy listening, I would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. I created a video to show you how, which you can find at our link at runnersconnect.net/RC50. Favorable reviews help us towards our goal of being the number one running podcast, and we would love for you to help us get there. Thank you in advance, and have a great week of running.